the moon had begun to turn upon its axis. This could mean only one thing. On the other side of the earth, in the land that they had stripped so suddenly of life, they were emerging from their long trance. As a waking child may stretch its arms to greet the day, they too were flexing their muscles and playing with their newfound powers.
"You have guessed correctly," said Rashavarik. "It is no longer safe for us to stay. They may ignore us still, but we cannot take the risk. We leave as soon as our equipment can be loaded, probably in 2 or 3 hours.
He looked up at the sky, as if afraid that some new miracle was about to blaze forth. But all was peaceful. The moon had set, and only a few clouds rode high upon the west wind.
"It does not matter greatly if they tamper with the moon," Rashavarik added. "But suppose they begin to interfere with the sun? We shall leave instruments behind, of course, so that we can learn what happens."
"I shall stay," said Jan abruptly. "I have seen enough of the universe. There is only one thing that I'm curious about now, and that is the fate of my own planet." Very gently, the ground trembled underfoot.
"I was expecting that," Jan continued.
"If they alter the moon's spin, the angular momentum must go somewhere. So the Earth is slowing down. I don't know which puzzles me more, how they are doing it, or why."
"They are still playing," said Rashavarik. "What logic is there in the actions of a child? And in many ways, the entity that your race has become is still a child. It is not yet ready to unite with the Overmind, but very soon it will be, and then you will have the Earth to yourself."
He did not complete the sentence, and Chan finished it for him. "If, of course, the Earth still exists."
"You realize that danger, and yet you will stay?"
"Yes. I have been home 5, or is it 6, years now. Whatever happens, I'll have no complaints."
"We were hoping," began Rashavarik slowly, "that you would wish to stay. There is something that you can do for us."
The glare of the star drive dwindled and died, somewhere out there beyond the orbit of Mars. Along that road, thought Jan, he alone had traveled, out of all the billions of human beings who had lived and died on Earth, and no one would ever travel it again. The world was his. Everything he needed, all the material possessions anyone could ever desire, were his for the taking. But he was no longer interested. He feared neither the loneliness of the deserted planet, nor the presence that still rested here in the last moments before it went to seek its unknown heritage. In the inconceivable backwash of that departure, Jan did not expect that he and his problems would long survive. That was well. He had done all that he had wished to do, and to drag out a pointless life on this empty world would have been an unbearable anticlimax. He could have left with the overlords, but for what purpose? For he knew, as no one else had ever known, that Karelin spoke the truth when he had said, "The stars are not for man." He turned his back upon the night and walked through the vast entrance of the overlord base. Its size affected him not in the least. Sheer immensity no longer had any power over his mind. The lights were burning redly, driven by engines that could feed them for ages yet. On either side lay machines whose secrets he would never know, abandoned by the overlords in their retreat. He went past them and clambered awkwardly up the great steps until he had reached the control room. The spirit of the overlords still lingered here. Their machines were still alive, doing the bidding of their now far distant masters. What could he add, wondered Jan, to the information they were already hurling into space? He climbed into the great chair and made himself as comfortable as he could. The microphone, already live, was waiting for him. Something that was the equivalent of a TV camera must be watching, but he could not locate it. Beyond the desk and its meaningless instrument panels, the wide windows looked out into the starry night, across a valley sleeping beneath a gibbous moon, and to the distant range of mountains. A river wound along the valley, glittering here and there as the moonlight struck upon some patch of troubled water. It was all so peaceful. It might have been thus at man's birth, as it was now at his ending. Out there, across unknown millions of kilometers of space, Karelin would be waiting. It was strange to think that the ship of the overlords was racing away from Earth almost as swiftly as his signal could speed after it. Almost, but not quite. It would be a long chase, but his words would catch the supervisor, and he would have repaid the debt he owed. How much of this, Jan wondered, had Karelin planned? And how much was masterful improvisation? Had the supervisor deliberately let him escape into space almost a century ago, so that he could return to play the role he was fulfilling now? No, that seemed too fantastic. But Jan was certain, now, that Karelin was involved in some vast and complicated plot. Even while he served it, he was studying the Overmind with all the instruments at his command. Jan suspected that it was not only scientific curiosity that inspired the supervisor. Perhaps the overlords had dreams of one day escaping from their peculiar bondage, when they had learned enough about the powers they served. That Jan could add to that knowledge by what he was now doing seemed hard to believe.
"Tell us what you see," Rashavarik had said. "The picture that reaches your eyes will be duplicated by our cameras, but the message that enters your brain may be very different, and it could tell us a great deal."
Well, he would do his best. "Still nothing to report," he began. "A few minutes ago I saw the trail of your ship disappear into the sky. The moon is just past full, and almost half its familiar side has now turned away from Earth, but I suppose you already know that." Jan paused, feeling slightly foolish. There was something incongruous, even faintly absurd, about what he was doing. Here was the climax of all history. Yet he might have been a radio commentator at a racetrack or a boxing ring. Then he shrugged his shoulders and put the thought aside. At all moments of greatness, he suspected, bathos had never been far away, and certainly he alone could sense its presence here. "There have been 3 slight quakes in the last hour," he continued. "Their control of Earth's spin must be marvelous, but not quite perfect. You know now, Karelin, I'm going to find it very hard to say anything your instruments haven't already told you. It might have helped if you'd given me some idea of what to expect, and warned me how long I may have to wait. If nothing happens, I'll report again in 6 hours, as we arranged." "Hello. They must have been waiting for you to leave. Something's starting to happen. The stars are becoming dimmer. It's as if a great cloud is coming up, very swiftly, over all the sky. But it isn't really a cloud. It seems to have some sort of structure. I can glimpse a hazy network of lines and bands that keep changing their positions. It's almost as if the stars are tangled in a ghostly spider's web. The whole network is beginning to glow, to pulse with light, exactly as if it were alive. And I suppose it is. Or is it something as much beyond life as that is above the inorganic world? The glow seems to be shifting to one part of the sky. Wait a minute while I move around to the other window. Yes, I might have guessed. There's a great burning column, like a tree of fire reaching above the western horizon. It's a long way off, right round the world. I know where it springs from. They're on their way at last, to become part of the Overmind. Their probation is ended. They're leaving the last remnants of matter behind. As that fire spreads upward from the Earth, I can see the network becoming firmer and less misty. In places it seems almost solid, yet the stars are still shining faintly through it. I've just realized it's not exactly the same, but the thing I saw shooting up above your world, Karelin, was very much like this. Was that part of the Overmind? I suppose you hid the truth from me so that I would have no preconceived ideas, so that I'd be an unbiased observer. I wish I knew what your cameras were showing you now, to compare it with what my mind imagines I'm seeing. Is this how it talks to you, Karelin, in colors and shapes like these? I remember the control screens on your ship and the patterns that went across them, speaking to you in some visual language which your eyes could read. Now it looks exactly like the curtains of the aurora, dancing and flickering across the stars. Why, that's what it really is, I'm sure, a great auroral storm. The whole landscape is lit up. It's brighter than day. Reds and golds and greens are chasing each other across the sky. Oh, it's beyond words. It doesn't seem fair that I'm the only one to see it. I never thought such colors. The storm's dying down, but the great misty network is still there. I think that aurora was only a byproduct of whatever energies are being released up there on the frontier of space. Just a minute. I've noticed something else. My weight's decreasing. What does that mean? I've dropped a pencil. It's falling slowly. Something happened to gravity. There's a great wind coming up. I can see the trees tossing their branches down there in the valley. Of course, the atmosphere's escaping. Sticks and stones are rising into the sky, almost as if the Earth itself is trying to follow them out into space. There's a great cloud of dust whipped up by the gale. It's becoming hard to see. Perhaps it will clear in a moment, and I'll be able to find out what's happening. Yes, that's better. Everything movable has been stripped away. The dust clouds have vanished. I wonder how long this building will stand, and it's getting hard to breathe. I must try to talk more slowly. I can see clearly again. That great burning column is still there, but it's constricting, narrowing. It looks like the funnel of a tornado about to retract into the clouds. And, oh, this is hard to describe, but just then I felt a great wave of emotion sweep over me. It wasn't joy or sorrow. It was a sense of fulfillment, achievement. Did I imagine it? Or did it come from outside? I don't know. And now, this can't be all imagination. The world feels empty. Utterly empty, it's like listening to a radio set that's suddenly gone dead. And the sky is clear again. The misty web has gone. What world will it go to next, Karelin? And will you be there to serve it still? Strange. Everything around me is unaltered. I don't know why, but somehow I thought that... Jan stopped. For a moment, he struggled for words, then closed his eyes in an effort to regain control. There was no room for fear or panic now. He had a duty to perform, a duty to man, and a duty to Karelin. Slowly at first, like a man awakening from a dream, he began to speak. The buildings around me, the ground, the mountains, everything's like glass. I can see through it. Earth's dissolving. My weight has almost gone. You were right. They finished playing with their toys. It's only a few seconds away. There go the mountains, like wisps of smoke. Goodbye, Karelin. Rashavarik. I am sorry for you. Though I cannot understand it, I've seen what my race became. Everything we ever achieved has gone up there into the stars. Perhaps that's what the old religions were trying to say, but they got it all wrong. They thought mankind was so important, yet we're only one race and... Do you know how many? Yet now we've become something that you could never be. There goes the river. No change in the sky, though. I can hardly breathe. Strange to see the moon still shining up there. I'm glad they left it, but it will be lonely now. The light, from beneath me, inside the earth... shining upward through the rocks, the ground, everything, growing brighter, brighter, blinding. In a soundless concussion of light, Earth's core gave up its hoarded energies. For a little while, the gravitational waves crossed and recrossed the solar system, disturbing ever so slightly the orbits of the planets. Then the sun's remaining children pursued their ancient paths once more, as corks floating on a placid lake ride out the tiny ripples set in motion by a falling stone. There was nothing left of Earth. They had leached away the last atoms of its substance. It had nourished them, through the fierce moments of their inconceivable metamorphosis, as the food stored in a grain of wheat feeds the infant plant while it climbs towards the sun. 6,000 million kilometers beyond the orbit of Pluto, Karelin sat before a suddenly darkened screen. The record was complete. The mission ended. He was homeward bound for the world he had left so long ago. The weight of centuries was upon him, and a sadness that no logic could dispel. He did not mourn for man. His sorrow was for his own race, forever barred from greatness by forces it could not overcome. For all their achievements, thought Karelin, for all their mastery of the physical universe, his people were no better than a tribe that had passed its whole existence upon some flat and dusty plain. Far off were the mountains, where power and beauty dwelt, where the thunder sported above the glaciers and the air was clear and keen. There the sun still walked, transfiguring the peaks with glory, when all the land below was wrapped in darkness. And they could only watch and wonder. They could never scale those heights. Yet, Karelin knew, they would hold fast until the end. They would await without despair whatever destiny was theirs. They would serve the Overmind because they had no choice. But even in that service, they would not lose their souls. The great control screen flared for a moment with somber, ruby light. Without conscious effort, Karelin read the message of its changing patterns. The ship was leaving the frontiers of the solar system. The energies that powered the star drive were ebbing fast, but they had done their work. Karelin raised his hand, and the picture changed once more. A single brilliant star glowed in the center of the screen. No one could have told, from this distance, that the sun had ever possessed planets, or that one of them had now been lost. For a long time, Karelin stared back across that swiftly widening gulf, while many memories raced through his vast and labyrinthine mind. In silent farewell, he saluted the men he had known, whether they had hindered or helped him in his purpose. No one dared disturb him or interrupt his thoughts, and presently he turned his back upon the dwindling sun.
This has been an Audible Frontiers production. Executive producer Steve Feldberg. Supervising producer Mike Charles.